The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, damn, we had us a crazy weekend of football. There were some upsets. There were some huge performances. It was just crazy. And we even had a game in good old London. So let's get it started with that game. That was the Minnesota Vikings at the New Orleans Saints. Even though it's at the Saints, they were obviously in London for this game. And man, London actually got a really good game between these two. It started out as, the Vikings were dominating the first half for the most part. But then the Saints started to get it going in the fourth quarter. And it was funny because the Vikings seemed to be moving the ball down the field very well. And it seemed like they had this game in the bag for the most part until the fourth quarter. And then all of a sudden the Saints turned it on. I don't know how it happened. Their rookie, Chris Olave, the wide receiver, he had to step it up because basically before this game, they lost pretty much all their starters on offense. You know, Jameis Winston, he was already doubtful before the game started, and he ended up not playing. So they had Andy Dalton in as his backup. And once again, here comes another team with at least a very capable backup. And he did. He came in and he played a very solid game. To start, it was kind of shaky, but I mean, he really held his own and actually played pretty well and kept the team in it the entire way. But then also Alvin Kamara, he was scratched right before the start of the game. I want to say like an hour before the game started, they decided he was not going to play. And then their wide receiver, Michael Thomas, he didn't play either. So basically, they were down to the chump squad, but the Vikings let them stay in it. And but it came down to basically two field goals at the end, more like three field goals at the end. That's basically what happened towards the end. Is the Saints and the Vikings were just trading field goals back and forth for the lead or a tie. And so earlier in the fourth quarter, the Saints ended up kicking a 60-yard field goal, and it went through. And I believe it tied the game. It either tied the game or they got the lead. Either way. Then the Vikings drove down the field, and then they were able to take the lead. And the Saints, it didn't look like the Saints had a shot, but they got a couple of solid plays down the field, and they were able to get their kicker within a 61-yard field goal. Now, he had just made 60 yards, and he made it solid. It was right down the middle. It looked like the 61-yarder was going through, but then it just curved just the tiny bit, and it hit the side of the field goal post, then doinked on down, and you hear the good old doink, and it hits the bottom bar and just rolls back into the end zone, and that is how that Saints-Vikings game ended. Vikings did get the win 28-25 in a crazy game in London. Kirk Cousins, he did have a solid game. He went 25 for 38, 273 yards and a touchdown. Dalvin Cook, it was questionable on whether or not he was going to play. He had a separated shoulder the week before, but he came in and had 76 yards. And then Justin Jefferson, he had an out-of-control week one, and then the last couple of weeks he's been quiet. This week he showed up and he had 147 yards. So the Vikings had a very solid offensive outing. Overall, offensively, they looked really good. The defense had a couple of penalties that cost them a couple of... It actually is kind of the reason why the Saints started to catch up is because the Vikings had a couple of stupid penalties and stupid mistakes that they made that let the Saints get into scoring position, and that's ultimately how they were able to at least get within scoring distance, but really, the Vikings won, and that's all that matters. Then we had the Washington Commanders at my Dallas Cowboys, and man, it's just really surprising to me. I remember, if you were listening, week one, I was pretty much done with the Cowboys because, you know, Dak Prescott gets injured and it's basically feels like the whole season's over. I mean, even before he got injured, the offense looked stagnant. And yes, I know it was week one, blah, blah, blah. But then when you have a backup quarterback coming in, you really don't know what to expect. Well, you really got to give it up to Cooper Rush because this dude has come in and he's done his job. He's not blowing anybody up. There's obvious reasons why he is the backup. He's very rusty. He misses a lot of open passes or overthrows a lot of things, but he's a great game manager and he's done a great job. He hasn't thrown any interceptions yet, and he's just gone out there and done his job. And what I really hope is both Dak and the coaching staff realize this is how the offense needs to run. We don't need to be, I know it's really sexy these days to be the high-flying Bills or the high-flying Chiefs and have these high-flying offenses where you just score a whole bunch of points. But you got to understand that while that is a part of the game, if we're getting wins by having a solid ground attack with both Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard, who are both playing such a great role in how this offense is going, the receiving core is finally getting in order. You know, Michael Gallup had a good day yesterday. He came right in his first game back from his ACL injury, scored a touchdown. CeeDee Lamb had a great game yesterday. You know, last week in the first half, he was very forgettable. But then in the second half, he redeemed himself. This game, he was in. His touchdown that he scored, it was like he took some lessons from Amari Cooper because he just juked this motherfucker with some beautiful route running and then just a beautiful catch to top it off. So great job for CeeDee Lamb. But overall, this offense is really clicking on all cylinders. But what I also like, and not a lot of people are giving homeboy credit here, but I'm going to give him credit. Everybody likes to shit on Mike McCarthy when he shits the bed and has horrible games. And I'm not saying he doesn't deserve any criticism because he's by no means a Bill Belichick, but he has really held this team together. We are on a 3-game winning streak and they totally could have crumbled and they haven't. And as a matter of fact, yesterday's game was awesome because for once the Cowboys didn't have a whole bunch of fucking penalties that screwed them over. So I'm really hoping he's also watching and coaching the same because I know they're kind of holding back with the coaching in certain plays because Cooper Rush is obviously not the same type of dynamic quarterback that Dak is with the running and stuff. But this conservative offense is actually working for us. And what I really do like that Mike McCarthy did these last couple of games especially is that he's just taking the points. Rather than going for it on fourth downs or rather than trying to make these crazy nonsensical plays just to have some cool little offensive flair, they're not really doing that, and it's working, and they're winning, and I really hope that they take this mindset on to whenever Dak comes back. Now, they're definitely getting a test this coming week against the Rams, but still, they've been playing really solid football. I really like what I see. The Commanders, on the other hand, they look like shit. The Cowboys' defense has the most quarterback pressures this season. So the defense is really holding it down. Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence, they have been fixture pieces on the defensive line, and they've really just made it difficult for every quarterback who's faced them so far this season. But Trayvon Diggs has started to get going too. And, you know, a lot of people were wondering if last season he was going to be a flash in the pan because he did. He had a great breakout season. And they kept talking about how he would get blown up in coverage and blah, blah, blah. And they kind of acted like the dude reached his ceiling and like he wasn't going to learn things this offseason and with what he did last year. And he did. He has really improved his game. And yesterday, he locked it down. And every time they threw the ball his way, he was there. He made the big plays when it was necessary. He even made a huge interception once again. So I really like what I'm seeing from this defense. But offensively, I like this conservative approach from the Cowboys, and they need to keep with it. Like I said, I understand it's very sexy to go with the high-flying offense, but we don't have those capabilities. At least right now, we don't. And quite frankly, this is what's working for us. Keep working that way. So Cooper Rush, he went 15th for 27, 223 yards, 2 touchdowns, and then CeeDee Lamb had 6 receptions, 97 yards, and a touchdown. So Cowboys had an overall solid day. and I'm liking what I see. Love that we have a three-game winning streak, because I did not think for 1 second that was going to be the case. Then we have the New York Jets at the Pittsburgh Steelers, which actually ended up being a pretty good game. Started off real slow for the Steelers, and they actually finally put Kenny Pickett in as the starting quarterback. Well, he didn't start the game, but he came in the second half. And it's just because Trubisky is just not getting the job done. But Kenny Pickett came right in. He did throw an interception. That would, I think his first pass was an interception. But he did get it going, and he really didn't let it get him down. He drove the Steelers actually became a competitive team in this game once he went in there in the game. He ran for a touchdown, and he made some big plays when he needed to. The Steelers, they are a team that has a lot of work, so I'm not surprised that they let up in the end. The Jets, on the other hand, I did pick the Jets, and they did get the win 24-20. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention the score of the Cowboys-Commanders game. It was Cowboys 125-10. Ha-ha, kicked their ass. But anyways, back to this Jets-Steelers game. So the Jets did get the win 24-20, and it was a back-and-forth game in the second half. The Jets were down, and it looked like they were going to let this game go, but the fourth quarter started going. Zach Wilson drove him down the field, got a touchdown, and then they ended up scoring on the last drive of the game, and got a good win for them. Zach Wilson, this was his first game back. He went 18 for 36 for 252 yards and a touchdown. And then Najee Harris, he didn't have a bad game. He went for 74 yards. And then the rookie wide receiver, George Pickens, had 102 yards as well. So we'll see what happens going forward. Mike Tomlin was kind of vague about who the starting quarterback was going to be this week. But I kind of feel like it's already time to go with the Kenny Pickett era, because he came right in and made a difference in that offense. Then we had the Cleveland Browns at the Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons got the win 23-20, which ended up being a back-and-forth battle between both teams. You know, the Falcons, they started off with a 10-0 lead, but then the Browns came out, and it was tied at 10 going into halftime. But then the Browns got really quiet on the offensive side of the ball in the fourth quarter, especially, and the Falcons just really started to get it going. And it's crazy, too, because the Browns, they have, you know, Nick Chubb, he had 118 yards and a touchdown in this game, and he's pretty much, I think, had 100 yards in every game so far this season, so he's just having a really solid year. David Njoku, the tight end, he had 73 yards. So the Browns aren't a horrible team. It's just they can't get over the hump. Jacoby Brissett, he had a horrible game-changing interception that kind of swayed the momentum of the game. So that was really kind of what it was. But, yeah, the Falcons ended up getting that win, which was very – I don't know if it was really shocking, but the Browns are they're just kind of struggling through the season. Whereas the Falcons, I kind of expected them to struggle, and they're actually, like, putting a pretty solid offense out there, if anything. Then we had the Seattle Seahawks at the Detroit Lions. This was all offense. The Seahawks ended up getting the win 48-45. They were rolling this entire game. I mean, they scored 14 points in the first quarter, 10 in the second, 14 in the third, and 10 in the fourth. Like, I could not believe that the Seahawks could score this many points just because of how terribly they've done on offense to start the season. I mean, they really haven't done anything. Whereas the Lions, I'm actually not shocked that they scored a lot. But here's the thing about the Lions, that it's shown in, I think, every game this season other than the ones than the one that they won. But they get off to these very slow offensive starts, and then they get it going in, like, the end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter, and that's just not going to cut it. They do have an offense that's very capable of scoring a lot of points. Obviously, they ended up with 45. I mean, Jared Goff went 26 for 39, 378 yards and 4 touchdowns. I mean, I've been counting out Jared Goff his entire career since the day he was drafted. I thought this guy was overrated from day one. This dude's made me a believer. Because when you go and play for Detroit and you're still doing really well, like, he was supposed to do the opposite. He was supposed to leave the Rams and leave being good in L.A. and then come to Detroit and shit the bed. But so far, he did well last year, And he's doing well this year. So Jared Goff has actually made me a believer that he's actually a halfway decent quarterback, if anything. And then TJ Hawkinson, the tight end, had 8 receptions, 179 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And then on the other side of the ball, the Seahawks' Rashard Penny, he had a great game. He had 17 carries, 151 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So this was just offense galore. Geno Smith had a great game. It was just really weird. Now, it's probably one of those games where two shitty teams went up against each other, and it just, there was no defense at all in this game. And then also a funny moment. Shout out to wide receiver DK Metcalf of the Seattle Seahawks. In my opinion, this dude's the player of the game because, he went for over 100 yards yesterday. He was a big factor in why the Seahawks scored so many points yesterday. Well, he had a little bit of bubble guts yesterday during the game. And there was this one point where he was getting taken off of the field on a cart. And everybody's like, oh, my God, what's wrong with DK Metcalf? And homeboy's like sweating like a motherfucker as he's coming off. And you're just thinking, oh, man, it's just because, you know, he's playing football. He's got to be sweaty from that. No, turns out he was about to shit his pants, or he did shit his pants, and he wasn't going to make it, and so he needed the cart to take him to the bathroom. So shout out to DK Metcalf for not only playing great in yesterday's game, but being a hilarious sport about it too, because he did laugh about it on Twitter later. So that was a very interesting turn of events in the game yesterday. Then we had the Tennessee Titans at the Indianapolis Colts. And the Titans continue to do what they continue to do against the Colts, and that's win. I believe this is their 5th game in a row that they've beaten the Colts. The Titans got the win 24-17, and they pretty much dominated this game from start to finish. The Colts just really can't get it going offensively. Even though they did end up scoring in the end, it was really just the Titans got out to a really solid lead. You know, Derrick Henry had a really good day. He went for 114 yards and a touchdown. Matt Ryan actually didn't have a bad day. He went 27 for 37, 356 yards and 2 touchdowns. But, I mean, the Colts just can't seem to put it together. And, I mean, they lucky for them, they are in a poor division. And so this division for me is completely up for grabs by any team other than the Texans. I could see the Titans, the Colts, or even the Jaguars winning this division. But the Colts really need to get it together. And they might. They might. They do have a veteran quarterback. And they do have Jonathan Taylor at running back, who did get injured in this game. So we'll see what happens with him moving forward. But this was a bad game for the Colts and a good game for the Titans. Then we had the sloppy game of the day, which I expected it to be, and that was the Chicago Bears at the New York Giants. The Giants did get the win 20-12, and it was just a horrible game. I mean, Daniel Jones, he ran for a couple touchdowns, but since he was doing so much running yesterday, he ended up spraining his ankle in the game, so he had to come out. And their backup is Tyrod Taylor, who's yet again another very capable backup quarterback to have, so good for them. Well, he comes right into the game, and he gets knocked out with a concussion. So they have to go to Saquon Barkley. Yeah, their running back. Saquon Barkley, he had to be the quarterback to basically kind of end the game there. And it was just a very sloppy, weird game. I mean, the Bears, as I said in the last episode, they are one of the worst offenses in the league, just statistically. They just really can't get it going. And they weren't able to do a damn thing yesterday. Even against the Giants, even though they're 3-1, they did not impress yesterday whatsoever. But hey, they got the win. Saquon Barkley did go for 146 yards, so Saquon's back. But other than that, it was a very sloppy, awful game in New York. Then we had the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Philadelphia Eagles. And at first I was like, whoa, is this for real? The score was 14-0 right off the bat, Jacksonville. And I'm like, whoa, are Jacksonville actually going to do this? No, shit turned right around in the second quarter. Jalen Hurts started to get it going. But man, this Eagles defense is crazy. I mean, they are one of the best defenses in the league. And they have one of the best ground attacks in the league also. They're not really killing it through the air as you would expect them to do, but on the ground, they are killing it. And defensively, the front seven is just attacking. Jalen Hurts had a solid game. He went 16 for 25, 204 yards, one interception, and a rushing touchdown. Sanders, their running back, though, he had a great game. He went for 134 yards and two touchdowns, and A.J. Brown had 95 yards. So the Jaguars, while they lost, a lot of it was due to the sloppiness because it was a rainy day. So Trevor Lawrence, he had a couple of turnovers yesterday, and it was just a very sloppy game from the Jaguars. But it was a very, very good game from the Eagles, and it was probably a great game for them just personally and within the locker room because they showed that they could overcome that deficit and then come back and hold on to the lead and ultimately get the win. And they are the only team in the league right now who are undefeated. So go whoever plays the Eagles. And then we had a really weird but damn good game, and that was the Buffalo Bills at the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens just came right out the gate, and they were just killing the Bills. It didn't look like the Bills were going to do anything. I mean, offensively, the Ravens were pretty much just doing whatever they wanted. They were just running down the field. You know, Lamar Jackson was just making some crazy throws and getting away from getting out of some sacks. And so he was having a great first half. But then the second half started. And this is, you know, I've been talking about the Ravens defense being very good. But one thing they're not good at is the second half. You know, the first half, they're actually pretty good. I mean, they do have a lot of sacks and they have some turnovers. So that's what statistically makes them good. But in the third and fourth quarter, they blow the lead bad. And this isn't the first time they did it. They did it against the Dolphins a couple weeks ago. So is this going to become a problem for the Ravens? It was a problem, at least in the second half, and you can't let Josh Allen get going. And unfortunately for the Ravens, Josh Allen got going in the second half. He was able to take them down the field, score a touchdown, and get the score all tied up at 20. And then late in the fourth quarter, the Ravens, they drove all the way down the field, but unfortunately it was a fourth and goal situation. Now this can go either way, and really, you can't blame Harbaugh for going for it on fourth down. And actually, Lamar took all the blame, and as he should have, because when you watch the replay, what happened was, is on fourth and goal, he drops back the pass, and he throws an interception. Now, had he looked to his left, he would have seen two wide open receivers he could have thrown the ball to for the touchdown. So he took the blame for that at the end. So you can't really blame Harbaugh for the call because, I mean, come on. Whether they got the field goal or they got the 7 points, if they just got the field goal, well, you pretty much know that Josh Allen's going to drive down the field and he could score a touchdown or tie it up. If they get the touchdown, they have to score a touchdown on the opposite end. So I get why they went for it. And of course, hindsight, if it would have succeeded, we wouldn't be hearing about it today, but it didn't succeed. And of course, everybody's criticizing him for it. But basically, after that interception, the Bills drove it down the field with the last, I can't recall how much time they had on the clock. I think it was like a minute and something left. But Josh Allen was able to drive down the field. They were able to take up all the time on the clock because they wanted the last say. And they ended up getting into field goal range, kicking the field goal for the win. And the Bills got a huge win, 23-20 in Baltimore. Josh Allen, he had a solid day. Not going to blow you out of the water day, but he went for 19 for 36, 213 yards and a touchdown. Stephon Diggs had 62 yards, but it was just a very weird game because it was weird to see that the Bills were ice cold during the first half and the Ravens were hot during the first half, and then it was the complete opposite in the second half from both teams. But yeah, it's a tough loss for the Ravens, but a great win for the Bills there. Then we had the Los Angeles Chargers at the Houston Texans, and this went as expected. The Chargers got the win 34-24. Justin Herbert had a phenomenal day. He went 27 for 39, 340 yards, and two touchdowns. His go-to receiver yesterday was Mike Williams for 120 yards. There was some good news for the Houston Texans. They actually did have someone show out yesterday, and that was their running back, Pierce. He had 14 carries for 131 yards and a touchdown. So the Texans did score some points. It was mostly in the second half that they ended up scoring some points, but it was a great performance by the Chargers. I know they needed something like that just to get going. They are suffering from a lot of injuries right now, but they keep it moving and they get the big win. Then we had the Arizona Cardinals at the Carolina Panthers. The Cardinals got the win 26-16. And really, they mostly, this was a close game all the way until the fourth quarter, pretty much. The Panthers kind of came out with to a 10-point lead. And then the Cardinals, and then you're like, oh my God, are the Cardinals not going to do anything? Well, unfortunately for the Panthers, this Baker Mayfield trade is not working out. He had so many like batted down passes yesterday. And I think he right now, I'm pretty sure I read earlier today that he's got like the lowest quarterback percentage like ever at this point in time. And that says a lot. So offensively, the Panthers, I don't know where they got the 16 points from at all. The Cardinals had a pretty solid day. Kyler Murray went 23 for 32, 207 yards and 2 touchdowns. James Conner had 55 yards. Hollywood Brown had 88 yards and a touchdown. So it was actually a solid performance by Arizona, just because for the most part, they've really haven't got it going in the first half, but the second half, they seem to get it going. This was a very good overall performance from the Cardinals and just a very bad overall performance from the Panthers. And we'll see what happens with them the rest of their season. Then we had the New England Patriots at the Green Bay Packers. The Packers squeaked out a win 27-24. And it should not have been this close because the Patriots, first of all, Mac Jones, their starting quarterback, while he's not that great, he was out with an ankle injury. So you had Brian Hoyer, the old-ass journeyman, who hasn't played in a million years, but he got the start yesterday. And literally on the first drive, he drops back to pass and gets pummeled into the ground, and he gets taken out of the game for a head injury. So then they send in their third-string quarterback with the last name of Zeppi. I can't even remember his first name because all I kept thinking was Zeppi, Zeppi, Zeppi. Horrible last name, and it was just fucking hilarious. And you're thinking, man, the Packers should just run away with this, especially once Zeppi came in the game. Well, that was not the case. They had, like, first of all, they had their receivers had a few huge dropped passes and a fumble that really fucked up the flow of some of their offensive plays. But it's just kind of weird to me that while Aaron Jones did have 110 yards in this game, it's weird that they're not really focused on the running game as much as they should be and relying on that as much as they should. Because Aaron Jones is a dynamic running back. He's probably, behind Derrick Henry, one of the best backs in the league because he's solid. He could get you – he's really fast. He's shifty. So he could get you yards on the ground, but he's also good – in the receiving, in the passing game. So he's a very dynamic running back, and he can score. So I kind of feel like they need to go through him. Then they also have A.J. Dillon as his backup, and he's an excellent running back too. So they have this great running back by committee. It's just their young receivers have just made some bad drops. Aaron Rodgers didn't have a bad day. He did throw a bad interception. But he went 21 for 35, 251 yards and 2 touchdowns. Alan Lazard had a good game. He went for 116 yards. But it should not have been that close. And, I mean, it was really just that close because the Packers' offense was that bad. And even Aaron Rodgers said it after the game. He's like, I'm happy we got the win, but we cannot play like this. We're not going to get many wins playing like this. So, offensively, they got to get it going, but you know, like I've continued to say, the first month of football is going to be sloppy for a lot of people. And right now, Aaron Rodgers has to get it going with his young receivers because they're dropping some passes and some fumbles, and they've done it consistently in all of the games so far. So those young guys, they've got to learn to hold on to that ball, or else Rodgers is going to be pretty pissed off, as he should be. Then to round out the afternoon's games, we had the Denver Broncos at the Las Vegas Raiders. The Raiders got the win 32-23. It was actually a very good game, it was a back and forth battle, as Raiders Broncos games usually are. Russell Wilson was 17 for 25, 237 yards and two touchdowns. The workhorse for the Raiders yesterday was Josh Jacobs. He had 28 carries for 144 yards and two touchdowns. And that's what I think has been missing from the Raiders offense to start the season. You know, Davante Adams, he had 101 yards, and he's actually had a very solid season for them. And Derek Carr hasn't looked bad either. It's just this ground attack hasn't got going with Jacobs. And so I think yesterday was that shows that they really need to get that ground attack going. The Broncos, on the other hand, while they scored 23 points, it was really a struggle for them to even get those 23 points. Offensively, they are just not looking good. They can't get it going, and it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of the season pans out for them. Not saying I'm counting them out. You know, Russell Wilson has a resume, and he is a good quarterback. He's been a good quarterback his entire career. But right now, these Denver Broncos offensively are not looking good. And then to round out the night, high-scoring affair, we had the Kansas City Chiefs at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Chiefs walloped the Buccaneers 41-31. The score kind of looks close, but it really was not that close of a game. It was mostly because the Buccaneers had a lot of mistakes. And when you play the Chiefs, you cannot give them the ball and set them up in good offensive field position, or else they will take advantage. And that's what the Chiefs did last night. The game started off with the Buccaneers. They got the opening kickoff, fumble it right there, and the Chiefs get the start right at the 20-yard line. And they score immediately. And it was basically just that. You know, the Chiefs just were on a scoring fest, and the Bucs had too little too late. Mahomes had an excellent game yesterday, and he had these just a couple of crazy touchdown passes, and he just had a great game. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he actually had a good game as well. He went 92 yards for a touchdown. Offensively for the Bucs, even though it wasn't that great of a game from them. I mean, Tom Brady still went 39 for 52 with 385 yards and three touchdowns. Mike Evans had a huge game, 103 yards and two touchdowns, and he had this amazing touchdown grab, I think, at the third quarter. But it was just too little too late for the Bucs, and they just were not able to stop the barrage of points, as nobody can, because that is the thing with the Chiefs. You set them up in good field position, there is like a 99.9% chance they're going to get some points out of it. And almost every time they're going to get 7 points. And that is exactly what happened there. Just offensively, they did not let up. And defensively, they're doing enough. Their defense is definitely going to let them down at certain points in the season. But and it did kind of let them down towards the end of the game yesterday. But they still were able to hold on and get that win. And then tonight we have the Los Angeles Rams at the San Francisco 49ers. Right now the 49ers are a 2-point favorite. And I've got the Rams winning this matchup tonight 30-21. Really just because it looks like the Rams are finally starting to get going offensively, defensively as well. And with the 49ers, they are a solid team. But I think it's really going to hurt because they're missing their main offensive lineman, and he's going to be out for a couple months, and he's a big deal, and whenever you're missing offensive linemen like that, it's going to affect their ground attack. Jimmy G doesn't really move a lot, so I kind of see that affecting the game tonight. While the 49ers do own the Rams were able to finally get over that 49er curse in the playoffs last year, so I do have the Rams getting the win tonight, mostly just because of that the injury on the 49ers offensive line. I just think the Rams defense is going to just get at Jimmy G tonight, maybe possibly cause a couple of turnovers. And they're just going to set their offense up in good position, and the Rams are going to take advantage. And I've got the Rams winning 30-21. Then, now let's move on to baseball. Like an idiot, for some fucking reason, I thought the baseball season ended over the weekend, so I was getting ready to, you know, make all my playoff predictions for today's show, and I realized, oh, shit, the baseball season doesn't end until Wednesday. So, So I've got my top 10 MLB power rankings today, and this will be the last one of the season. So let's get it started with number one, the number one overall top 10 MLB power rankings. They've sat at number one for God knows how long. It's a stupid-ass Dodgers. Can't drop them because they're at 110 wins, 49 losses so far, 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Rockies and the Padres, and they just keep winning. Cody Bellinger, he has his moments where he gets hot and cold. Well, he got hot this weekend. It sounds like he's getting hot at the right time because the playoffs are right around the corner. Then their pitcher Tyler Anderson, he went for 10 strikeouts yesterday, and Urias, he's having a great season. So yeah, it's just all around wonderful season for the goddamn stupid Dodgers. Hopefully somebody beats them in the postseason. That's all I got. Then at number two on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I've got the Atlanta Braves. Overall record of 159. They've been 7-3 in their last 10 games, and they just swept the New York Mets this weekend. So it looks like they're going to win their division. Their magic number is one, so really all they need is one win, and they've got the division wrapped up. And not only did they play the Mets last week, but they also played the Nationals. But they're just really, they're just playing some great, solid baseball. They're getting a lot of offense. Hell, even Dansby Swanson, he's having one of his best seasons offensively and defensively. He just hit his 25th home run. Their starting pitching is just killing it. There really isn't anything bad to say about the Braves. I'm kind of hoping they continue this because somebody has to beat the Dodgers. And at this point, once the playoffs start, that is who I'm rooting for. Anybody but the Dodgers. All right, at number three on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I have the Cleveland Guardians, who just continue to go on this tear that nobody's really talking about. Their overall record is 90-69. They are 8-2 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Royals and the Tampa Bay Rays. Their closer leads the league in saves right now, Class A. He's got 41 saves on the season. And they just have an overall solid team that just knows how to get the job done. So they are killing it right now. So you really got to watch out for the Guardians. Then at number four on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I have the Houston Astros, who are 104-55, 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Tampa Bay Rays and the Arizona Diamondbacks. Jeremy Peña, the rookie, man, the Astros are kind of like the Dodgers, where it's like they just keep pulling these great players out of their asses, and you're like, where the fuck do you keep getting these guys? And that's what it's up with this Jeremy Peña guy. He had a great week, and it's not just offensively that he's doing it. This guy's great on defense, too, and this is a rookie, so it's going to be interesting to see what kind of a career this guy ends up having. And then Justin Verlander, right now he's at he's got 17 wins, 4 losses, leads the league with the lowest ERA at 1.80. So Justin Verlander, he's been my Cy Young Award pick for the AL basically all season, and I don't think you can argue against that with a couple of games left on the season, right? Then at number five on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the New York Yankees, 97-61. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Baltimore Orioles and the Toronto Blue Jays. Aaron Judge is still stuck on home run number 61. They are playing right now, but I've got it on Monday Night Football. But I know they've been showing his at-bats, which I know bothers some people, which I think is hilarious because just so you know, the reason why they're doing that is because most of us want to see this. Even non-baseball fans actually want to see that. Me personally, I do too, because I'm sorry, but when it comes to football, football trumps everything in my book. If football is on, I don't even care if the game is like the Detroit Lions versus the Cleveland Browns. I'm watching that game. I love football. So that's why I have football on right now. But I definitely am interested to see what's going on with each and every Aaron Judge at bat. But he is stuck at 61. And you could tell this weekend he really wanted to get number 62. As a matter of fact, I think in the last couple of games he was kind of forcing it at the plate. And that's why he struck out so much this weekend. And he's fallen behind in the Triple Crown in the batting average category. Arias from the Twins right now has like a, I think like a 3% or 4% lead over him right now. So in these next couple of games, Judge could potentially still get that Triple Crown. But I definitely think he's going to hit number 62 at some point in these next couple of days for sure. Then Nestor Cortez, he also had a solid outing. He had 12 strikeouts. And then another guy is Oswaldo Cabrera. They just called him up from the minor leagues, I want to say, 3-4 weeks ago maybe. And this guy's really just come on strong. And he looks like he's going to be huge once they get to the playoffs, because the Yankees definitely need that injection of offense. Well, it seems like they've got a lot of offense. They're going to need that just because the Astros are going to be tough to keep pace with. Then you've at number 6 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I've got the Seattle Mariners, overall record of 87-71, 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Oakland A's and the Texas Rangers, and they, for the first time since 2001, clinched a playoff spot. And so they are officially in the playoffs for sure, and we'll see what happens. The Mariners are a weird team. They are a team that usually tends to choke once they get to the playoffs, so I'm not really expecting much from them, but they are a very scrappy team. They've got a solid starting pitching. They've got a great batting lineup, and they play very good defense. It's just I don't know if they're going to be able to put it together, especially because I think they're going to be matched up against the Guardians, and if that's the case, I'm going Guardians all the way in that one. Then at number 7 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I've got the St. Louis Cardinals, overall record of 92-67. They've cooled off these last couple of weeks. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Milwaukee Brewers. Albert Pujols hit his 702nd home run on his career. So we'll see where he ends up come Wednesday. But right now, Albert Pujols is at 702. So congrats to you. Then at number 8 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I've got the Toronto Blue Jays, overall record of 90-69, 6-4 in their last 10 games. They are in a 3-game winning streak. They just swept Boston this weekend. As a matter of fact, this season, the Toronto Blue Jays went 16-3 versus Boston Red Sox. That's some ownage right there, especially against the Red Sox. I mean, I know the Red Sox weren't that good of a team this year, but damn, 16-3, that's saying a lot. They also played the Yankees earlier in the week, so the Blue Jays, they are on fire at the right time of the year. Then stumbling this week on my top 10 MLB power rankings all the way down to number 9, the New York Mets, who just got swept by their division rivals, the Braves. Looks like they're going to lose that division lead in the last couple of games of the season, which is just really shitty for them because they pretty much had the division lead all season long for the most part, but they choked hard in the end. And as a matter of fact, man, like, the Braves kicked their ass. I mean, they owned their starting pitching. I mean, Scherzer didn't have that great of an outing. And then DeGrom, he had a horrible outing. So that was not good for the Mets, and I don't think that's a good way to get into the playoffs. You never like to stumble into the playoffs. I'm not saying the Mets are going to be one and done, but that is they're 4-6 in their last 10 games to top it off. So they are not looking good right now, and they actually didn't play that well against the Marlins earlier in the week either. And then rounding out my top 10 MLB power rankings are the San Diego Padres, overall record of 87-72. They are 4-6 in their last 10 games, so obviously it was a struggle for me to find 10 teams to put in my top 10 this week. This past week, they played the Chicago White Sox and the Los Angeles Dodgers, and they also clinched a playoff spot, a wild card playoff spot, of course, because they're like 900 games behind the Dodgers. Notice my San Francisco Giants are nowhere to be found in this top 10, but they're also nowhere to be found in the playoffs this year because they had a horrifically shitty season. So hopefully they could take care of all the issues they had this year, because the San Francisco Giants were a piece of shit this year. And then just a little bit of a couple of extra pieces of baseball news. Shohei Ohtani signed a $30 million one-year extension with the Los Angeles Angels, so it looks like he's going to be playing with them at least for next year. Because they were set to go to arbitration in the offseason, but they ended up just giving him $30 million, and we'll see what happens with Shohei Ohtani, if he ends up being trade bait, because that could be a possibility, or if the Angels actually are able to get their act together and be a halfway decent team when you have literally two of the best players in baseball on your team and you can't even make the playoffs. How does it happen? Really, how do you have Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani on your roster and you can't even get a wild card spot? That's fucking pathetic, Angels. So you better not waste these good years, because these are two solid players and you're wasting some time here. And then the last bit of baseball news is Tony La Russa. He is going to retire. I had a feeling that was going to happen because he's been out for like the last 2 months now. They hadn't said what the health issue was, but it turns out he's had a couple surgeries on his pacemaker. And that makes sense, because when you're a manager or a coach of a team, or really just if you're involved with sports at all, you're going to have some high blood pressure. You're going to have some high stress. And so it makes sense that Tony La Russa is going to step away from the game yet again. What is this, like the third time he's retired, I think? Regardless, he's had a stellar career. I respect the hell out of Tony La Russa. Not only did he manage the Chicago White Sox this year, he started managing with the Chicago White Sox. Then he managed the Oakland A's and the St. Louis Cardinals. And he was very successful with both the A's and the Cardinals, especially the Cardinals. I mean, he did win three World Series, two with the Cardinals, one with the A's. But I, in my opinion, I feel like the best, well, it's really difficult to argue against those A's teams that he had, but those Cardinals teams were damn good too. But regardless, he's a three-time champ, he won six pennants in his career as a manager, and he also has 2,897 wins. There's only one manager in the history of the game who has more wins than him. And Tony La Russa, obviously one of the greatest managers of all time. And unfortunately, he had to step away because you can't calm down being a manager. And then the playoffs are pretty much set. In the AL especially, really, it's just going to come down to seeding at this point. Right now, the 1, 2, and 3 seeds would be the Houston Astros would be 1, New York Yankees 2, Cleveland Guardians 3. And then right now in the wild card, we've got the Toronto Blue Jays, Seattle Mariners, and Tampa Bay Rays. They've all three locked up those wild card spots. It's just really going to be where everybody lands with these last couple of games. And then in the National League, the Dodgers, of course, they've locked up everything. The NL East is still up for grabs, although the Braves are probably going to take that any day now. The St. Louis Cardinals, they got their division, so that's the 1, 2, and 3 right now. And then the wild card, the New York Mets and the San Diego Padres, they have clinched division spots. So so there's one wild card spot up for grabs. Right now the Phillies have it, but Milwaukee is only 2 games behind. So we'll see what happens. Milwaukee has really kind of fallen off the face of the earth this past week. But the Phillies aren't doing that great either. So we'll see what happens with these playoffs here. And on Friday's show, I will for sure be talking baseball playoffs, because we will finally have baseball playoffs, and that's when the wild card will start. Not today, for some reason, I don't know why the hell, I thought the season ended over the weekend. I'm glad it didn't, though, because I really want to see Aaron Judge hit 62. But anyways, we're going to end today's show on a hilarious note. Kind of similarly hilarious as last week. Because Oklahoma got their asses beat again. And this week it was even worse. They got stomped to the curb by TCU 55-24. At halftime, it was 41-17. That's how bad TCU was kicking their ass. I mean, it was like TCU was just scoring like no other. Their quarterback had 3 touchdowns, over 300 yards passing. Their running backs had, I think, between the two of them had 5 touchdowns. It was 4 or 5 touchdowns between the two of them. It was just an insane day for TCU. Whereas on the Oklahoma side of things, had 2 quarterbacks play. One didn't even get over 100 yards, and the other one threw for like 110, some bullshit like that. Their offense was just trash. Their defense couldn't do shit either. So, Oklahoma sucks. And guess what this week is, y'all? It is Oklahoma versus Texas Longhorns. And that's why I'm laughing so hard, because this is even better. Because now it's like an even matchup between the two of them coming into this. Because, you know, sometimes when it's the Red River rivalry, it'll be like Oklahoma's dominating and the Longhorns suck, or vice versa. It's happened lots of times. And usually it doesn't matter. I mean, it's always, for the most part, a very balanced game. It's not usually an ass-kicking. On occasions, it is, of course. But for the most part, it's a rivalry for a reason. This is like the biggest game of the year for us, other than if you go to the national championship. But this is great. This is great. OU just got stomped 2 weeks in a row. And this week was not... It was worse than last week to Kansas State. Now, like I said, Longhorns, they got the win this week, and they're not killing it. But they did play Alabama well, and we do get Ewers back this week. So I'm looking forward to Texas OU this week. But Oklahoma sucks. that shit is just so funny. They got their asses beat. So hopefully the Texas Longhorns are able to send them to 3 losses in a row. So we'll see what happens on Saturday, though. We got a long ways to go. But anyways, we're going to end it on that note. Hook 'em horns. OU sucks. I will talk to you fools on Wednesday.